Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Kerry Brody. In 2018, Kerry had a devastating and shocking loss of her 9-year-old son, Seth, to sudden unexplained death in childhood, or more commonly known by the acronym SUDC. Since then, she has been on a path of transformation and self-discovery as she learns each day how to put the pieces of her shattered life back together. Kerry has become an active member and volunteer for the SUDC community as a parent advocate and part of their speaker series. Kerry is also a group administrator for a large community of bereaved grandparents, parents, and siblings. In July of 2023, Kerry continued her education and dedicated her commitment to serving the grieving community by becoming a certified grief educator through David Kessler's training program. After that, she continued on to become certified in grief movement with Paul Denniston and completed that program in January of 2024. Also in 2024, Kerry became certified in spiritual and transformation life coaching. She is also a trauma-informed instructor and a meditation leader. Kerry's first book, Do You Know the Way, was released on March 12, 2025. This is her authentic account of her healing journey, along with tips and tools along the way to navigate this unknown path. And with that, Kerry, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for a while now.
Me too. Thank you so much, Dave, for having me here. It is such a pleasure to be able to speak with you today.
Well, as I mentioned, it's a pleasure to have you. And we met through a mutual friend on the journey, Christina Napoleon, who is the author of The Positive Widow and has transcended her own life-altering challenges. And she had been a guest on my podcast. She introduced us thinking you would be a good fit for the podcast, and she was absolutely right, and that brings us to this point today.
Yes. Christina and I worked together. We met in our grief educator program. She recommended your book to me, and it touched me so much, and then she connected us so we would be able to do a podcast episode, and a couple months later, here we are. So wonderful to be here.
And one of the things we're going to be talking about is your book, among other topics. But my first question for you today is, please tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Oh, wow. I guess the saying that you never know where your life is going to take you is very true for me and for you. I kind of had a very, I'm not going to say easy, but smooth sailing, just the regular types of things in life, your regular ups and downs and stressful things with jobs, but basically kind of was coasting through. I was very happy in my life. I married my college sweetheart. I had a very close family growing up, lived in suburbia. So it was kind of like your whatever normal is, normal life. And then, you know, we had our two children and we were kind of going along as normal. And then because we had a sudden death of my son, Seth, nothing anticipatory or that we could prepare for. And basically, like, just my life was shattered. The bombs dropped. He was fine in the morning. And then 6 hours later, I went into cardiac arrest and couldn't be resuscitated. So that life experience from what I had experienced before to then was totally life altering and life changing. And you can't be the same person after that. And that's why I deem it life one and life two, because there's nothing the same about it. I can find little tidbits and I can paste them back together, but they don't look or feel the same at all. So this totally shook me up and cracked me open like it's supposed to. And I had to reinvent myself and figure out where I fit now in this world, because I was just like a million pieces and they didn't come together at all. And I had to totally figure it out again. It was almost like even learning to walk or learning to speak. I didn't recognize myself at all, the person in the mirror or the words that I said. And as my connection grew with my son, I also changed tremendously. So this was totally life transforming and life changing. There's very, very few things that I recognize from before that I experience now.
Yeah, and my life prior to my daughter Janine's transition is a lot different, was a lot different mm-hmm. than it is now. And I mean, like you, if you asked me who the person I was prior to her death, I couldn't even begin to tell you. That person is far, far back in the rearview mirror. And the pieces don't fit together quite the same anymore. But if they did fit together the same, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. Or I would not have found peace and acceptance while still honoring the grieving process after 22 plus years. And you're right, there's no life experience that could even prepare you for the prospect of bearing a child. And it's just something that we have to avail ourselves of support. We have to, you know, be willing to put out our beliefs on the table and take a look at what stays, what goes, and what gets expanded on. But one of the things that is is true, that if we are doing the work, we come out different after the whole process of grief.
Yes, totally. Someone very early on who is a bereaved mom and a grief coach told me that we have to mourn the loss of our old self as well as the person that we love. And that really stuck with me because it was a double grieving process because that person doesn't exist anymore. And the person that you love is no longer here in the physical with you. So you can't exist in the same way or relate to the world the same way. It's like you have to relearn everything and recreate yourself and how you're going to be in this new life that you didn't want, that changed without your permission.
Absolutely. But the thing that we have control over is how we respond to the challenges and what we do to try to find meaning and help others as a result of the challenges from our own traumatic losses.
Yes, and that's something I never expected I would do. And my grief trainer, when I became a grief educator, said, like, grief work doesn't, you don't find grief work finds you. And it's usually through a life experience that you find this purpose and meaning in helping and holding hope and being a light for others.
Absolutely. Tell our audience about your son, Seth.
Oh, I would love to. I love to talk about Seth. I mean, everybody, you know, loves their children and thinks highly of them, but Seth is a really, really special individual. In his 9 years, he experienced so much and had such a strong impact on people. We adopted Seth from Japan, and he was only 16 days old. So we flew over the continental divide to over many continents for 14 hours to land in Japan and take custody of him at 16 days old. And then we stayed there for 4 weeks. And like, you could just tell he was just such a special baby. And he was just so loved and so kind and so himself. He was so very authentic. Would just tell you like it is, you know, but he was a kid, so he was fully kid, but he's just so intelligent. He was intelligent beyond his years, gifted in math and science, and people just liked him. And his shortcomings, he made fun of himself. So I think that endeared people to him. And like even very young children, at his celebration of life, a child a little younger than him came up and said, when I started at a new school and I didn't know anyone, Seth came over and sat and ate lunch next to me. You know, he and his friends had already said they were going to have their own podcast. So being here on your podcast is just amazing. And they were going to start their own company and they were going to do gaming and they were going to turn it into a career. So he had all these dreams and aspirations, and I try to live out as many of them as I can for him. Yeah, he was just like dynamic, and that's why so many people still remember him and talk about him, and we write his name in the sand all over the world. And he was an adrenaline junkie, and he traveled as much as we could take him and went on a helicopter ride above the Grand Canyon and loved his friends and just was an amazing, amazing person, and still is, because I have a very deep connection with him in spirit, like I know you do with Janine. And I know that he's doing amazing things, and his influence on me and his friends on this earth from across the veil is just unbelievable, the impact in such a short time.
Well, it sounds like he's an amazing young man. And like you, I always speak of my daughter in the present tense, because they are still with us. They're just in a different dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And we can connect with the spirit of our loved ones anytime we so choose, that they are very much a part of their lives, and the best parts of them are integrated into the best parts of us. So moving forward, that's how I believe we effectively deal with grief, is by keeping them close to us, but also making them a part of everything that we do.
Absolutely. I don't know how I would exist without those beliefs and that connection that I have with him. It will never, ever replace him being here, but I have to go for the next best thing to be able to survive and have meaning in my life. And I always speak of him in the present, because the present is where he is. I stay in the present moment, because the past, we have a lot of good memories, but the past is not here. And the future brings more pain. I've suffered enough, so I like to stay here in the present, right where he is, and I can connect with him. He's all around. He's not far away.
No, they never are. I mean, really, I think Maury Schwartz put it best, that the distance between life and death is not as great as we think.
No.
Well, thank you for sharing a bit about your son, Seth. He sounds like an amazing young man, and I am glad he is a part of your life. And if he's a part of your life, he's a part of every other life that you are going to touch.
Thank you. You know what that means, Dave.
Absolutely. Now, during our introductory call, and you explained that Seth transitioned from sudden unexpected death in childhood. What is it exactly, and how frequently does this condition manifest in the general population?
You know, when it happens to you and then you are surrounded by a lot of people, it seems like it's really common. But of course it is not. It's known as the SIDS of older children. Most go to sleep and then never wake up. But for some, like Seth, 30% manifest in their waking hours. It's not very common, but it seems to be on the rise. And they think there is a genetic component. The SUDC Foundation does so much work doing research. And there are some parents with younger children that did have a video camera. So they did actually videotape what happened to their child either during a nap or overnight. So they are finding more and more links. But what's really interesting is, of all the families that we have in our organization, there's never been the occurrence of SUDC twice in the same family, even though it's really, really believed that there is a genetic link to it. But it's a very, very recessive gene. And because we adopted Seth, we have no way to know if that gene was present in his birth family, because it could even be a gene that is way, way back. And then it only manifests in not that many. They say it is 1 in 4,000 of children under 4. So the older you get, the more unusual it is. But also, I don't think it's well documented or reported, because when this happened to us, and then they say, we have no idea why. And then you do further testing. Like, if I wasn't active on social media and I didn't keep sharing in multiple bereaved parent groups what happened, I may have never found out that SUDC exists, because I never heard of it. My husband never heard of it. Everybody that I know that is in the SUDC now, they never heard of it. before it happened to them. So it's really spreading it through word of mouth to get the awareness out there. And March is SUDC Awareness Month, which is also Seth's birthday and also one of the reasons that I published my book in March to raise awareness for SUDC.
The title of your book is Do You Know the Way?
Mm-hmm.
So tell our audience, one, how you got the title for your book.
Oh, yes.
What the book is about, how Seth inspired the project, and what you want readers to take away from it, not necessarily in that order.
Definitely. It was probably, I've always loved to write, and I've expressed myself through writing, through journals, probably from the time I'm very young and I could write. I wrote in a diary. So I've always loved to write, and people said to me way in the beginning, you're going to probably write a book. And I said, no, I would never write a book. I'm too upset to write a book. I'm too, like, private to write a book. I made up all the excuses in the world. It would make me too vulnerable. Nobody would read it. And then it must have been about 2 or 3 years ago, a medium that I'm very close friends with told me, I really see you writing a book and you and Seth are going to write it together. And I'm like, nope, discredit it. And then I am a big meditator and I was sitting on my meditation cushion on February 14th, Valentine's Day, which is a sad day. I don't know why, but I guess because I always showered my children with love on Valentine's Day. Seth still has the hearts on his door that I put one for each day of February, and I always bought them gifts and cupcakes. And so I was feeling kind of sad, and I did my sitting in the power, and then I connected with him, and he told me 1 year, almost before it published, that we were writing a book together and we were starting now. And I tried to tell him no, but when he's persistent with something, forget it. The first time it's an idea, and then when I don't listen with a nudge, I get a push, and then I get a shove. And he just, the more I resisted it, the more he kept giving me more and giving me more. And he gave me the title, he gave me the cover, he gave me, like, everything about it all in that half-hour meditation session. And then I said, I'm getting off my meditation cushion. I'm going to take a shower because I can't even process all this right now. And I couldn't even, like, dry off. I came out with a towel and I wrote, like, the first, like, 3 chapters. And I knew it wasn't me, like what we were saying before, that we say different things and we do different things. The words were just coming and I'm like, I couldn't even type fast enough. And I knew it was him and us together. So the book is called Do You Know the Way? Because he is a meme junkie. And he and his friends sat on YouTube and they listened to all those YouTubers who said memes. And then they would go around and they would repeat all the memes they liked and thought were funny. And Do You Know the Way was with the little red character. Was a big one in 2018. And whenever I disciplined him or I said no to something he wanted to do, he said, Mom, you don't know the way. You don't know the way, do you? Like, you're not cool enough and you're not letting me do what I want. So you don't know the way. You don't know the way things are done. So right away, he told me the book is going to be called Do You Know the Way? And in my eulogy to him at the end of his funeral, I had said to him, you always say to me, do you know the way? And I always said, I do not know the way to navigate this life without you. And I hadn't even remembered that I said that until that moment when he told me the book had to be called Do You Know the Way? And then it just seemed so perfect, Dave. Like, I wouldn't be able to call it anything else. We don't know the way as bereaved parents. I had no idea what the way was. I didn't know anything. I didn't know if I would ever find my way. And then it is navigating the who, what, why, where, when, and how of this grief journey. I mean, everybody has grief in their life, and it doesn't even have to be death of a loved one. There's grief in everything. There's so much grief in the world, grief for different things. And people have said to me that it is a life skills book with a lot of lightness and a lot of bit of a, like, 9-year-old in it. It has a way cool healing tip at the end. And I don't know about you, but I had a lot of trouble reading in the beginning, and sometimes I still do. A book like yours, a book that I really relate to and has a lot of spirituality in it, I can get through pretty quickly. But other books, even if they were just fun light reading, I couldn't get through them. So this book is laid out in very easy paragraphs. You don't have to read it in order. You could just pick it up and it would make sense. And it also has bulleted tips. So if you can't read a paragraph, you could go right to the bottom and just get the gist of what it's about. And then someone else told me it's actually a book about love. It's a book about love, a love of a mother and a son and a relationship. And when something severs that relationship in the physical, how you pick up the pieces. And so it's not your typical grief guide that says, you do this, 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 and this, and then you're done, because that's definitely not what the grief journey is for me. It is a lifelong healing journey. There is no finish line. This keeps going and going. So that's what I wanted to express in my book. And then at the end, it talks about our love and my meditation practice and my gratitude practice. And those are life skills that anybody can use. I wanted it to be able to touch a large population and have something that everybody could relate to and put a bookmark in.
Yeah, I mean, there's no such thing as a typical grief journey. Grief is going to look different for everybody. For you, obviously, you have a strong connection with Seth, and obviously he was your co-author for this book, and he made his presence very well known. There have been other books that I know have been channeled. One in particular that I know was The Afterlife of Billy Fingers by Annie Kagan.
Yeah.
One of my favorite books on the afterlife. If not my favorite book on the afterlife, where her brother Billy communicated with her through from the afterlife, and together they wrote a book. He passed down his wisdoms that he had acquired, you know, in spirit. Passed those down to his sister, who in turn passed them on to the world. And there is still quite a heavy following of The Afterlife of Billy Fingers on Facebook. And that book is still referenced today. And the book was released in 2013. On March 1st, it was published, which March 1st was the day that my daughter transitioned.
Yes, I know.
So when I found out the date of the publication of The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, I had to get the book. Not because I didn't believe in an afterlife, but there was something in that book that was for me. And it turned out that there were several teachings in that book that I resonate with and that I refer to today. So,
yes, that was one of the first books that I was able to read all the way through pretty early on in my journey. And it just resonated so much.
Yeah. And, you know, we read differently. I mean, in early grief, our concentration, our energy levels aren't that great. So I used to resonate to, like, in early grief, to shorter articles, shorter books. The thing I like about your book is that it's not long, but it's impactful. It's a combination of raw emotion, a raw memoir, practical suggestions, and proof that love continues beyond the veil, because your son is very much a part of the style and of the writing of that book, and very much a part of the content of it.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad that that you felt that when you read it, as that's very important to me. That was one of the main things. I wanted to be authentic and honest and show raw emotion and then communicate our strong connection and get the parts of him into it that he insisted be there.
What are the challenges associated with SUDC that make the grief journey different from other causes of child death?
I think it's the unknowing, that you will never, ever know what caused your seemingly healthy child to just die instantly. And that's terrifying. And we like answers in this society. We're very answer-oriented. And people think that I'm just holding the truth back and I don't want to tell them what happened. But the truth is, I don't know. Like, the death certificate says unknown, like cause unknown. And I think that's just very unsettling. When others hear that, that is terrifying. Like, what is scarier than knowing that your child could just die of no reason and no unknown cause. And nobody actually said it, but I got the feeling like they were like, that can't be true, that there has to be something. And is it something that we did as parents, or like the accusations around it and the terrifying nature of it, which almost makes you seem like you have the plague and people don't want to talk to you or associate with you because then maybe you can catch it. And we just have that extra layer. Like, it's horrible, awful to even know what your child died of in anticipatory grief and death. It's awful. They're all awful. Or a car accident or drowning. They're all terrible. But people's first question, which I find so unnerving, is what happened, right? If they don't know you and they hear that you had a child transition, oh, what happened? And to say, like, we have no idea exactly what happened, that's really off-putting. And it's just like another layer, because it's almost not that you ever really have closure in this, but there is none. You just will always have this question mark. So I just have to surrender to the unknowing. If I hold on to that, that will just cause more suffering, and it's not going to help my situation. It's not going to accomplish anything for me to focus and dwell on it. So probably several times a week on the meditation cushion, it comes up and I just have to release it and I have to surrender it to the universe and know that it's not something I'm meant to know while I am still on this earth, because I never will, because we don't even have genetic testing or anything, because Seth was adopted and there are other adoptive families in the SUDC and we have the same thing. But I love my SUDC tribe, as I call them, because they understand that extra layer. You know, there's always something, like you said, the grief journey is different for everybody, but we have some similarities in it. The pain we feel, no matter how our child transitioned, is pretty universal. And then I have this bond with people that also have that unknowing, that just will never know, and we need to figure out how to be okay with that, to exist on this world, in this world, and also explain that to other people, that we just don't know and it's okay.
Sometimes we learn that it's okay in life to live with certain ambiguities, certain unanswered questions, because no matter how hard you try to find an answer to any question regarding why someone transitioned or passed away or walked on, as the Native Americans will call it, or died, and however we conceptualize death, the only answer that we are going to accept is that somebody coming down from the great beyond, whether it's God or creator, saying, look, we made a mistake, we're going to give you your life back. And that's not going to happen. So what we're faced with is a reality of not so much why it happened, but what are we going to do now that it's happened?
Exactly. Exactly. And how do you go on from there and move forward with the information and knowledge that you have? So I use my power that I can raise awareness. I can give money for research, and I can support other people going through the same thing, especially in the beginning of their journey when it's so difficult.
Exactly. Now, I know you've talked a lot about meditation as being something that has been very key for you in your own grief journey. Talk a little bit about that. How has meditation benefited you in grief? How can it benefit others in grief who choose to incorporate a meditation practice into their toolbox?
Yes, I think I say this in my book. It's one of the tools that probably saved my life. Of course, it's how I connect most deeply with Seth. I do get signs and messages and synchronicities when I'm not in a meditative state, but I get my deepest messages and connections when I'm in that total sense and state of relaxation and presence. And it brings me to a place of peace and stillness and connection. And I especially love it in like the dark. When I wake up really early and my house is silent and I just light a candle, it just brings me some peace and calm and ease. And since COVID hit, 16 months after Seth transitioned, I was able to really profoundly practice meditation. So I didn't only have the 10 or 15 minutes before you would go to work or something like that, and then maybe before you go to bed. I had hours during the day, and I think that helped me clear my grief and also open up my channels. And I started more and more different practices and different explorations of meditation and mindful, just being like more mindful and aware. So I can see the signs, so I can hear the messages. And it was just like that safe, sacred place for me of serenity and harmony. And, you know, and I do different things. I have my favorite meditation leaders that I listen to. They're guided, and then I'll go into silent. But sometimes I'll just do sound healing, and other days I'll do breathwork meditations. And it's just become like a way of life for me. It's like brushing your teeth, you know? And I don't know what I would do without it, because it's just my place, you know, my place that I can go and connect with Seth and my mom, who's also in spirit, and just be with no judgment and no expectations and no to-do lists. I just let all that go, all those questions, all the what ifs. If something's bothering me, I can go deeper. And I just found it such a way to help my healing that I can do myself and take, because I think as bereaved parents, we lose control. We feel like we've lost control of our life and our world. It's a place where it's just me and silence. So I can take back some of that control and some of that power and go inward. And for me, it's just such a beautiful practice. I just found it helping me find myself, my new self, and put those pieces together in life too.
And I know there's a variety of different ways to meditate. And I think for me, it's important. I think that individuals find a way of meditation that's comfortable for them, that's going to allow them to go within, that's going to allow them to find peace, and more importantly, allow them to connect, you know, with nature, with their loved ones, and you know, find a practice that's going to suit your style of grieving and suit your personality style.
And some people believe that you have to sit cross-legged on a cushion and be quiet, and that's not what meditation is. And people discount it and say, I can't do it, but there's walking meditations, there's open-eye meditations, there's breath work, there's sound healing. Or like you said, you could just go out in nature and just breathe and look at the trees and listen. And it's just so revealing to me.
And the physical and mental health effects of meditation have been documented. It reduces stress. It reduces anxiety. And for individuals who make it a regular practice, it can actually increase longevity. So there's a variety of different benefits to meditative practices. But again, it all depends on which practice is going to be suited to our particular style of relating to the world. But with meditation, there's something for everybody.
Exactly. I find that.
You're also certified in grief movement, and you're a chakra flow guide as well, too. Tell us a little bit about what grief movement and chakra flow is. And how has this informed your bereavement support with parents?
Yes, it's something that helped me so much. Like I mentioned, in 2020, we were pretty new in the grief journey. And people tended to be incredibly generous and give away a lot of things for free because it was kind of a collective suffering. We were all locked in our homes and isolated. So people started to offer programs that they never offered before on Zoom and bring communities together and did a lot of free ones. I had done a lot of healing classes, one-on-one therapy. I was in mediumship classes and all types of things, but I still at 16 months was feeling really, really stuck. And I felt it in my body. So I got an email across the screen and it said, join us for grief yoga, grief movement for bereaved parents. And it's free. What do I have to lose? Nothing. I found that most of the things I did, even if they didn't resonate or really help, I didn't come out any worse, and I may have met somebody on this journey that I connected with. So I said, I have absolutely nothing to lose. I'm going to try it. So I went to the 45-minute free class. I laid out my yoga mat. I said, whatever it is. And Dave, let me tell you, it was one of the most cathartic things I had ever done. I felt that heaviness and that like lump in my chest and in my throat just relieve. And then I started paying for it. I started doing every class. And the teacher was so non-judgmental and open that he said, if you need to lay in child's pose the whole time on your yoga mat and cry, go right ahead. This is an invitational practice. You do you. You do what you need to do. You have your camera on. You have your camera off. So I took everything that was offered. And it's amazing. Like you were just talking about meditation, like the physical that we hold on to in our body from our grief and all the crying, we don't even realize it. So to be able to release it through breath movement and sound was just so incredibly freeing. During my grief educator training program, they had guest speakers that would come in, and the person that developed grief yoga came in and said that he was offering a grief movement program for non-certified yoga teachers that you could do from a chair and you could basically teach anybody. And that just resonated with me. And I'm like, it's something different that I can vouch for that really, really helped me. And I can teach it and incorporate it into my grief coaching program. And that's what I do with Christina, because we're both grief educators. I do the grief movement portion with her groups. And it's just so wonderful. And I just want to share that with as many people. And if it resonates and I can give them more tools in their toolbox, all the power to us, right? The more tools we have, the better. Keep what resonates, throw out what doesn't, keep for later what you might need for later. And it's just been, it's something I would have never known. I'm so glad, Seth, that I didn't delete that email, because, you know, we go through and we say, nope, nope, nope. And I said, yes. When we say yes to healing and something inside us tells us to, it's usually a really, can turn out to be a really, really good thing. And then with the same teacher, I took a chakra flow leader class. And it's just, again, a different approach maybe for some people that believe in that and that resonates, that the energy systems in our body, and to keep them balanced and regulated, we can do different exercises, different movements, and different types of breath and different meditation to stay aligned and focused. Just another little approach, a little tweak on the same thing that resonates with some people. People that do Reiki and reflexology, and that helps them to have their chakras aligned, has energy centers in our body. It gives them a really warm and fuzzy good feeling to something they can relate to. So it's something I believe very strongly in, like my meditation and my gratitude practice, to really help that it's a mind, body, spirit all together, and moving our body makes us feel really, really good.
Yeah, I think movement is therapeutic, because we hold a lot of grief. We hold a whole lot of trauma in our bodies. And I think the more that we can do some movement, movement can be healing, can be therapeutic. And it gets the tension, the tension that we experience in our bodies because of our trauma. It makes that, I think, more manageable. So I'm a firm believer that we do hold grief in our bodies, and anything that we can do to get it out of our bodies and, you know, make the trauma more manageable from a physical standpoint, I think is going to be key to us continuing to move forward with renewed purpose in our journey. So
definitely. What's so great about this is you can do it from a chair if you have some mobility issues. If you want to lay down and be on your yoga mat on the floor, you can adapt it to that. If you want to stand up, and also identifying where you hold grief in your body or stress, it also helps you identify that, so then you can work and focus on that area.
Absolutely. Carrie, one of my last questions for you today is if you could leave our listeners with just one takeaway today, what would that be?
Oh, wow. There's so many. But what I always say to people is be open. Like, be open to meditation. Be open to grief movement. There's a lot of things out there that you can do to help yourself being open to healing, not being closed off. Because at first I thought I was going to be really closed off and never do anything, and that I was destined to a life of misery and suffering. I think that is what we automatically think when we're first in that shock and trauma. But like I always say to my clients, if you're open, like if you're open to read my book, open to read your book, open to try new things, open to the tools, there is so much out there that you can use to help yourself to find meaning. Being open to the spirit world, not being afraid, just being open to your loved ones. They want to talk to you. They are there. You have that ability. You don't have to be a medium. You don't need any special ability. If you are open, they'll come and you can do it. And you can survive and find purpose and meaning and love. Love is what leads the way.
Absolutely. And if love leads the way, we will find out that we do know the way. So speaking.
Exactly. Exactly. That's how I find my way every single day with Seth. We move forward with them, not leaving them behind. We're not moving on without them. I always use the word with.
Yeah, we're moving with, we're moving through grief, we're moving with our loved ones. The best parts of who they are become the best parts of who we are. And that redefines our life narrative.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That's why I was so looking forward to this podcast, because I just resonate with you so much. Thank you so much for your compassion and your support and for doing this and sharing it with the world.
Well, you're welcome. And my last question for you, I'm not going to let you go that easy.
Okay.
If people want to contact you, contract for your services, purchase your book, what's the best way for them to do that, Carrie?
Yes, my book is on Amazon, Do You Know the Way by Carrie Brody. I'll show it to you really quickly because Seth designed the cover about a month before he transitioned. He painted this in his art class. That's on Amazon. I have a website. It's www.heartfelthealingwithcarrie. Carrie Miller Brody on Facebook, or Heartfelt Healing with Carrie Facebook page. So any of those ways. And my business email is the same, heartfelthealing@gmail.com.
All of that will be in the episode notes when the podcast goes live.
Excellent.
Carrie, thank you so much for your time today, for sharing your passions, for sharing your journey. I enjoyed our conversation immensely, and I hope we can do it again in the future.
Me too, Dave. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And stay open and with love.
And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.